97.5, The Fanatic.
Connor Brody here on 97.5, The Fanatic. I have you covered until 10 o'clock. Matt Mollo on the other side of the glass. I'm excited for today. We got a lot to talk about, all right?
It's a great sports day.
It is a great sports day. You got a lot on the table today. And we had a lot happen yesterday, too. The 76ers clinching the number one seed. And it feels amazing. It really does. It puts a smile on my face. Yes. Yes. That's beautiful. It really
is. I'm the most unstoppable player in the league.
Welcome to Philadelphia.
That's so beautiful. Oh, it's so beautiful. It's amazing. It really is. I'm just picturing. It's unfortunate we haven't been able to experience 25, 26, 27,000 people in the Wells Fargo Center after a game is over to hear that song be played. But I'll tell you what. Knowing that we're going to get more individuals in that building definitely gets me juiced up for sure. That's going to help out this Sixers team on this playoff run as the playoffs run through South Philadelphia. It's insane. I love it. So me personally, I'm trying to find that balance right now because there's a side of me that just wants to appreciate the moment, live in the moment right now, and understand this is monstrous. Statistically speaking, you get that number one seed, you have a high percentage of getting to where you need to be. At the same time, I do feel like I'd be doing myself a disservice if I did not look at stuff that scares me as well. Both can be true. I don't think you need to be 100% blind with maybe the flaws with this team or some concerns or some questions that you have. The thing is, it can't be everything. You might have issues with this team, whether it's the inability of Ben Simmons offensively, maybe it's the rotation with the bench. There's some things that you can throw out there that might be the downfall of this team. While I say that, the Nets have the same problem, their own version of that problem. The Milwaukee Bucks have the same problem, their own version of that problem. The Miami Heat, if they end up getting that 4-seed, whatever, everyone's all talking about what the Miami Heat can do just because of one regular season game where there was a lot of reasons why I think the outcome was what it was. I'll tip my cap to Miami. I think they played hard-nosed. They played tough. They had a mission. They accomplished their mission. That doesn't really change the way I feel about this Sixers team moving forward because of a game 70 of 72 when the Sixers had a weird... Okay, Joel's meeting the team in Miami. He's sick. He's not sick. You don't have Matisse. And the Miami Heat are trying to maneuver their way through the conference to face a different team in the playoffs and whatnot. It's like circumstances mattered when you talk about the context of what happened with Miami. But my point is this. I'm trying to specifically myself trying to find the balance of I can't wait to see this team play when it matters most. Half court sets, the game slows down, possession by possession. You're licking your chops just ready to see what's going to happen the next trip down the court. And I'm also trying to, you know, look at this objectively and say, well, guess what? We've seen problems with Ben Simmons standing in the dunker spot once again and a double team, triple team coming at Joel Embiid and him not passing the basketball perfectly, which results in a turnover. We've seen those problems. We know that there's an issue with this bench in certain rotations and the way that Doc has used those rotations. That doesn't mean that I think any less of this team, but that's a big part of reality. So that's kind of where I'm at. Now, where are you right now with this? Because I'm trying to balance it. That's all.
So I definitely have plenty of concerns when it comes to this Philadelphia 76ers team. But at the same time, I'm enjoying the win. I'm enjoying them clinching the one seed because it's not like the Philadelphia 76ers are in a situation where they're fighting for a three or a four seed. No, they have the number one seed right now. That is amazing. To me, going into the season, I thought they were going to be an improved team that were going to be fighting for that three or four spot if they were lucky. I thought they could go as low as six again, depending on how well the other teams in their conference improved. But they have the number one seed right now. I knew they were going to be good. I didn't know they were going to be this good. And I love almost every second of it. Again, there are some concerns that come along with their last couple of games, but I'm super happy they have the one seed because the last time they clinched the one seed, I was 7 years old. It's been 20 years since they clinched the number one seed. And I am all for that right now, especially because when you clinch the one seed in the NBA, good things tend to happen for you in the playoffs.
Yep, no doubt about it. You nailed it with that statement right there. And as much as I might look at this team and question certain parts of them, and, you know, just I look at this and there's a little bit, just a little bit of, okay, what if something on the bad side happens or it doesn't run as smoothly as I would have anticipated? They still have just as good of a shot as any other team, if not a better shot than some of the other teams involved right now in this Eastern Conference. I think I would feel a lot differently, too, if LeBron James was healthy and it was the LeBron James that we have been used to seeing over the last handful of years. But because, and I'm looking at not just the Eastern Conference, I'm looking at the entire NBA right now. I don't know what Utah is. Phoenix has its own problems. The Denver Nuggets had injuries to Jamal Murray, which clearly, I think, puts a cap on how far they can go. Yeah, Kawhi Leonard, Paul George, maybe there's something in L.A. I'm just looking at this entire league, though. We're so used to seeing, okay, you know the Golden State Warriors are going to win, and we've been through this before, but we know LeBron James is going to be in there. You don't have that this year, which almost makes it even that much sweeter. It's so wide open. It's so wide open. And I heard a caller call into Rob, and I never really thought of it this way, but it somewhat put a little spark into my brain, if you will. When the Eagles went on that ride, you just enjoyed the ride and knew at some point, maybe it was that Carolina Panthers game that really sparked the idea in your head of this team maybe can do something. Just take that approach, I think. And I'm trying to, like, digest that so I can, because my goal by the end of this show at 10 o'clock is to have a better feel on where I am emotionally, because I'm a little lost emotionally right now. I need to get that grasp. Maybe it was that. Maybe it was as simple as saying, remember the Eagles ride? Were you dissecting heavily the flaws of that team? Or were you just going on the ride saying, this team's good, let's see what they can do? Maybe I just need to take that approach for this Sixers run.
Well, I think it's a little bit of both. And this goes back to a conversation we had a little bit ago where we talked about the luck factor in sports. Sometimes luck does play a factor, but at other times, luck comes to those that are prepared, or at least good luck comes to those
that
are prepared.
So you put yourself in a position for luck to bounce your way, kind of.
Yeah, and I think the 76ers, given the right opportunity, especially with this team when it's 100% healthy, I think they can make a deep postseason run. Like, even like, I'm not going to say like everything is going to go their way. When you're a good team, like you almost have to face adversity because that's going to be the turning point on whether or not you're a great team or not. But I don't have too many concerns when it comes to this Sixers team. I really don't.
I'm with you. I have a few. I have two that come to my mind. Would you like to hear my two?
Absolutely.
Okay. Number one's Ben Simmons. All right. And I mean, you can sell
for
me,
obvious reasons.
Yeah. I mean, I love him to death. I love his playing style in terms of everything he does other than the one thing he doesn't do. I can appreciate his defense and I appreciate everything, literally everything about Ben Simmons I'm in love with. But there is, and this is what ticks me off about the Ben Simmons thing. And I think the perfect example is right up 95. All right. It's the New York Knicks and it's Julius Randle. Julius Randle has taken such a huge leap in a lot of areas in his game to become this player where all of a sudden the New York Knicks fans were questioning, what are they doing with all these power forwards and who do they have? And now it's, we got to make sure Julius Randle's a part of our franchise forever. The switch was made. But you see such a big jump in his attitude, his swagger, his delivery, and his approach to the game of basketball in so many different areas. Yet with Ben, and I hate to do this. See, I don't want to do this, but it's hard for me to get away from it. One problem and no adjustment, no improvement. Julius Randle, so much improvement, so much development in 5 to 6 different areas. Why does that happen? So that's my number one. And number two is just the bench minutes, how it's going to be distributed. So those are my two that scare me, but I'm trying to be very optimistic here. I'm trying to be.
Well, I mean, those two things are really going to make or break this team come playoff time because Ben Simmons, let me ask you this. Do you think this is the potential end of the road for Ben Simmons? Is it do or die for him? If he shows up, he's safe, obviously. But if we keep seeing this on and off when it comes to his potential and what he can do for this Sixers team. If he plays off, let's say, in half the games the Sixers play come playoff time, is this really the end of Ben Simmons as a Sixer?
I don't know the answer to that question. I would have to see how it really plays out. I would have to see what it looks like. I'd have to see how damaging it is. And then there's a counter to that as well. If you do have a, like, think about how good the Sixers are this year, right? They're a very talented team, and everybody looks up at them saying, we got to take down the Sixers. If you're telling the entire league after this year that our team was so good, and after this year, we have to get rid of him because he was that much of a problem. I'm just, think about the statement that makes if Daryl Morey is now trying to pick up the phone saying, I got to get rid of this guy after where they are right now. What type of message is that to send to the other team when it comes to compensation, when it comes to what you get back in return? If he has another poor playoff run, how does that impact what the Sixers can get back in return? And you wouldn't just trade him for anything. You wouldn't just get rid of him to get rid of him. So would there even be something available for you that would intrigue you enough to even make that decision if it was brutal for Ben Simmons this postseason?
Right, and for the Ben Simmons haters out there, some of them, they propose ridiculous trades where one for one, Ben Simmons for James Harden. Okay, well, if you hate Ben Simmons, why are you proposing a one for one trade with James Harden?
Well, I would do that in a heartbeat, but that's just, it's not, it wouldn't happen.
But for the haters out there, if you're proposing a one for one trade like that, are you acknowledging that Ben Simmons does have talent and you simply don't want him as a 76er? Or are you trying to bank on the fact, or are you trying to bank on fleecing another team and you're ignoring his talent and skill set? That's the question I have.
No, you're right. Because if you despise the man, why would he be able to get you James Harden in return if he's that bad of a basketball player is what you're saying. But every team, this is what it all comes down to, though. Every team, every coach is going to say this at the end of the day. Oh, if I get my hands on him, right? I mean, think about how every coach is. Brett Brown probably thought that. Doc Rivers at some point probably thought that he would be able to get Ben Simmons to shoot. I just think at any point, all these coaches, oh, if I get my hands on him, I'll fix him. So there is that element of a but that's the thing is, and this is what upsets me. And if you can't tell, I'm conflicted. Here we are. We should be really appreciating the fact that this Sixers team is going to give us a nice run. They really are. Yet what it consistently comes down to, and it's not our fault. It's the nature of the beast, really. It is. It comes down to, well, Ben Simmons, Trey Ben Simmons. I hate that it goes that way, but I think it's right that it goes that way at the same time.
And for me, when it comes to Ben Simmons, my main concern with Ben, it's not even, forget the shooting problem. It's not a shooting problem for me when it comes to Ben Simmons. For me, it's just simply driving to the lane, putting the other team in foul trouble. And sometimes the aggression is there. And to quote Devon Givens, aggressive Ben Simmons is the best Ben Simmons. But when he's not aggressive, that's where all the haters start to come out.
And deservingly so.
Yeah. And I completely understand the hate. And I completely understand the Ben Simmons stands out there who praise every little thing he does, especially on the defensive side of the ball. And forget, I don't care about the jump shot. I really don't care about him not shooting 3-pointers. But when he doesn't drive to the lane, when he has such an elite ability to drive to the lane and put other teams in foul trouble, when he doesn't do that, that is what aggravates me, especially when the Sixers are down and he has a serious chance to be the turning point for a Sixers victory.
Is it as simple as this question? Is Ben Simmons the X factor? Because when I ask that, I feel like Matisse is the X factor because he can give you that defense off the bench that can maybe change the series. Or is Tobias Harris being the closer the X factor? I try and come up in my head with all these scenarios. And it's, okay, for the Sixers, this playoff run, who's going to be the X factor? And I feel like Ben Simmons is too big of a player to be an X factor. It's like saying, oh, Joel's the X factor. Well, of course he is. He's too big. You know what I mean? Now, like, to label Joel Embiid the X factor is almost unfair. Your best player is your X factor? Oh, okay, let's move past that. So is Ben too much of a big player to be that X factor, knowing his glaring holes and his problems so far in his career, in his short career in postseason play?
Maybe it's the awakening of aggressive Ben Simmons. Maybe that's going to be the X factor. Not necessarily Ben, because we all know what he can do on the defensive side of the ball, how he can facilitate the ball, how he can help you with the rebounds, but driving to the lane more and being aggressive. And again, putting the other team in foul trouble so that way you can just dummy them.
Yeah, on both sides.
I think that's going to be the X factor. Just simply putting the other team in trouble.
Yeah, and if you put them in foul trouble, maybe they feel the need to back off a little bit offensively. I can't pick up an offensive foul, right? I mean, who knows? It can change every angle of this if you put the other team into foul trouble. It's going to be really interesting. 610-632-0975. I can't wait, though. I'm torn. I'm conflicted. I'm trying to find my way. And I guess that's the point of the show here today is help Broats, help myself find my way, the right way to feel. Because
we need the
torn.
Spa music.
Yeah, we need a lot. I'll tell you that. We need a lot. Let's go to Mike in Jersey. Mike, you're on 97.5 The Fanatic. What's up, Mike?
Hey, bros. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Big fan of you and the show and Coffee with Bros. I love it all. I've been a fan of you for a while.
Thank you so much, Mike. I really do appreciate that.
Yeah, no problem. I just wanted to talk about why people might be scared of Miami.
Okay.
I'm not scared of Miami whatsoever. I think the number one seed's huge. We barely lose at home as it is. And with the Wells Fargo Center getting fans back, it's going to be enormous. I mean, they barely lose at home. But I think the reason being was we thought we were going to be able to skate away with playing the Knicks or the Hawks. And now you're going to play a Heat team who's smart. And they'll bring your lunch pail to work kind of group and organization. They're very aggressive. And they're going to bring physicality, as you saw the other night with Udonis Haslem coming in for 2 minutes just to get into the face of Dwight Howard. They're going to try to get under your skin and get some people ejected. And you saw that in 2018 when we played them. It was a different roster, but Justice Winslow stepping on the mask, Dragic slapping Ben Simmons in the back of the head. It's just they're kind of... That's the organization. They're going to come physical, and they're going to try to get under our skin. And Jared Dudley did it the other year when Jimmy Butler got tossed. And it's going to be players like that that are going to be differences in series to see, hopefully, if Embiid can not get technicals. Because if he gets one technical, he can't be as dominant in the post with nowadays how soft the league's gotten.
Yeah, so I'll say this. You're right that teams are going to try and bring that physicality, and you might get it differently compared to the Heat or compared to the... Well, the New York Knicks play tough, but I don't think they play as tough and as smart as maybe an Eric Spoelstra-led team, even though I do respect what the Knicks did this season. You might have thought... Throughout the last few weeks, maybe we can escape in that second round and play a weaker team. But the reality of the situation is that second round is supposed to be tougher. So if you do get a tougher matchup, that's really how it's supposed to be. Think about the Brooklyn Nets who are going to have to play the Milwaukee Bucks. That's a second round matchup. That's tough. That's brutal. So you're right. Maybe there was this mentality of we're going to get an easier second round matchup. But majority of the time, you do get this. So I guess that's why for me specifically, I'm not thinking about it differently or thinking about it in a weird way. I feel this is what second round basketball is supposed to. Like, as you alluded to, it happened with Jared Dudley and the Nets. So yeah, it happens all around. It doesn't matter who you're playing. That's the intensity of playoff basketball.
No, I agree. And one more point I want to make is why I think you're still on the fence, as a lot of Sixers fans are. Like, I want to enjoy the moment, but are we good enough? Are we not good enough? I think the question is the bench, obviously, as you alluded to, because we don't have a significant rotation. In years past, we had a significant rotation. It was James Ennis comes in for defense offense late in the game for J.J. Redick. I think that's going to happen with Thibodeau and Seth Curry as well this playoffs. But other than that, George Hill, Shake Milton, Tyrese Maxey, minutes seem to be up in the air. And I'm not really a big fan of Mike Scott this year. I think Paul Reed should play some more minutes, but that's a different story. But I think come playoff time, it's going to be interesting to see our consistency offensively, because defensively we're versatile and we're a great group. But offensively, we have three stars, Simmons, Embiid, and Harris, who like to do their work in the same painted area. A lot of their damage happens in that painted area. Harris at the elbow and post moves. Embiid gets doubled all the time on an island, and you got Simmons at that dunker spot. So it's going to be interesting to see if Danny Green and Curry and Milton, if these guys can step up and help space the floor for us.
Yeah, no doubt about it, Mike. Thank you so much for the phone call. You made a lot of great points there, and I saw that Rich Hoffman, I actually listened to this, was on with Tyrone Johnson earlier today, and he was talking a little bit about the bench. And what I've been saying with the bench was, I want to see eight men. And the eight men that I would have, just early, this is earlier in the playoff rounds. If we face the Milwaukee Bucks, I think I have to change the big man idea, because they space you out a little bit with the Brook Lopez, with the Bobby Portis. You might have to go with Ben Simmons as your stretch five instead of Dwight Howard. But before you get to that point, I would go with George Hill as your sixth guy. I would go with Dwight Howard, and I would go with Matisse Thybulle.
I love that.
That would be my eight. And then I would understand sprinkling in the ninth of Shake Milton. But I want to
sprinkle it in. Don't set that in stone.
Now, this is what Rich Hoffman, who covers The Athletic, had to say to Tyrone earlier. He said, I would play Milton, I would play Hill, and I would play Thibodeau. That would be the eight. If you want to add Dwight in, that's nine. And if Korkmaz or Maxey are outplaying one of those guys, throw them in. Now, that's interesting. To me, here's the only situation that I think I would feel comfortable. And quite honestly, I think Tyrese Maxey outperformed Shake Milton for that
time. Hands down, yeah.
I really do. But I don't trust him because of his age. Whether that's fair or unfair, I just don't. This is grown man basketball. Everything we just saw over 72, guess what? It's a different type of beast now.
See, but also Shake Milton, A, is also really young, and B, doesn't have that basketball IQ. I don't know about Tyrese Maxey's basketball IQ, but he drives harder than Shake does, so I have to trust him more naturally. And Shake Milton doesn't... I can't trust him offensively side of the ball, nor, and even more egregious, the defensive side of the ball when it, for Shake Milton as well. That bench... Ben Simmons concerns me, but that bench sometimes gives me a heart attack
watching these games. Here's a positive to your thought then right now. If your biggest worry is 5 minutes of bench play, well, that's significant. 5 minutes could be the difference in a 10-2 run, a 12-2 run. It could definitely be a reason why you can look back after a game and say, you know where you lost it? You allowed that opposing team to go on a run when you went to your bench or whatever the case may be. So I'm not saying it's not important, but there's 48 minutes of a basketball game. So if you're telling me your biggest fear is 5 out of 48, that's where we go back to, you're in a good position.
Well, that's where I should have faith, right?
Yeah, that's where you should have faith.
That's their biggest concern. And how much of a big deal do you think the bench really is? I think you're trying to save me right here. And I kind of want to be saved.
Well, I think it depends on how Doc does it. If you're going to stagger the guys, which he should do, then I feel a lot better.
It's all going to come down to Doc strategizing.
Is he going to go full bench mode? Like
no,
a full five-man unit bench?
I don't see that.
He's done it all year. And he claimed, look, I agree. I think he's too smart. I think Doc Rivers is way too smart to do it, to be fair. But he has mentioned, I want to use 11 men. And he's utilized a full bench lineup in the past. Now, here's the other question. If you play the Charlotte Hornets, can you get away with it? Does he go with that mindset of, well, it's the Charlotte Hornets, we're up 15, it's the third quarter with X amount of time to go.
No,
maybe we can buy time.
Basketball.
I'm with you. I am with you. I really, really am with you. I would love to think that is the case. I'm just throwing it out there. Is it possible that maybe he does that? I would love for the answer to be no. I just don't know. And that's where I'm having trouble. I don't know. I would love to think the answer. He's too smart. See, a lot of me thinks that he mentioned 11 men. Like, oh, I want an 11-man rotation. Because there's 8 games to go. You need to keep your young guys engaged. Imagine being a back end of the bench player. And you know already that I'm not playing. Now there's, even if it's a minor percent of hope, you're still fighting an inch. You know, you're scratching, you're crawling for every inch. Because you think there's still a chance. Maybe it's a psychological thing with the team. Hey, I want to go 11 men. So he pushes his back end of the bench to keep playing hard while you try and solidify that number one seed. Is that a possibility?
I think it's a possibility, yeah. I think there's a lot of strategies that Doc Rivers can implement, but I don't think he will go a full bench unit out there, or at least not for a long period of time. I see him doing it for maybe a short stretch for a game or two where he knows it won't cost the Sixers anything. But if it's like a game 7 situation,
sure.
I don't see that happen.
Sure. No, I'm with you there. I think you'll see a lot different bench rotations if they play the Hornets in round 1 compared to what's going to happen in an Eastern Conference Finals. I mean, that's just inevitable, right? 610-632-0975. 610-632-0975. The Philadelphia 76ers are the number 1 seed in the Eastern Conference. How do you feel? How do you feel right now? Do you feel great? Are you a little skeptical of the situation? Ben Simmons, the drama surrounding him not shooting is going to resurface and it's going to be heavy. How do you feel about this team? Should you be excited, or is there a little bit of you that, you know, knows you should be excited, but you can't help that there's some negativity involved as well? And that's kind of where I stand. 610-632-0975. I'm Broads and you are listening to 97.5 The Fanatic.
97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
97.5, The Fanatic.
The Fanatic. 8:01 on this Saturday. Vlad Guerrero Jr. just crushed one off Aaron Nola. 3-1 count.
2-0 for him.
Yeah. He's tearing the cover off the ball. That's for sure. We need Aaron Nola to have a big bounce back. He was awful, and I mean awful, on that Sunday night baseball game in Atlanta. He's got problems in that ballpark, and he's going to have to get over that funk. You're talking about the Braves. We're not talking about some team you barely see when you go on the road. You're talking about the Braves. He's going to have to be better, for sure. But let's continue the 76ers topic, for sure. And look, this team, I even told Nat during the break, I feel guilty. I do. This team did everything it was supposed to do. This team went out and won. They checked something off that was significant to their locker room entering the season. This is step one of, let's say, hypothetically, a five-step process, if you're going to look at each round as a step. Step one, Eastern Conference, number one seed. Step two would be win the first round. Step three, win the second round, yada, 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 on. So this is the first step that they check. It's a big accomplishment. Yet we're wondering so much about Ben. And we're wondering, if it doesn't work, what are you going to do? And I don't think that's wrong. I really don't. I don't think that's wrong at all. But I feel guilty about it.
Well, you could be happy with the result and still criticize things you didn't like about the process of getting there. I think you should.
But I don't hate the process of them getting there, well, necessarily.
Well, what about the flaws?
But and that's where it goes back to, every team has to think that you're ever going to have a team that just straight up has no flaws would be what, the Golden State Warriors with Kevin Durant, Steph Curry, Klay Thompson. Like, that's the team I can think of where they had no flaws. And guess what? The weird thing is, after 73 wins, they didn't even win the finals.
Yeah.
So the most perfect team I can remember.
And they still lost.
And that's what happens when this all goes back full circle. When you have one guy that can elevate you so far to make up for your lack of talent. The problem is, LeBron James, at that time, playing for Cleveland, I love Joel. Joel's not LeBron James.
Well, I also think you can lose with a perfect team when you don't acknowledge your flaws, or, I don't want to say play down to your opponent, but when you don't prepare for an opponent like LeBron James.
Well, if you remember, too, there was that, the play where Draymond Green was suspended. There was a lot, when you go back into what happened, gets kicked out of the game, he's suspended. That turned around the entire series. So there's so much that goes into it. It wasn't your standard seven games and everyone was available. Draymond Green, we go back to X Factors. Who could be the Sixers X Factor? Well, the Warriors that year, losing Draymond Green emotionally, physically, physicality-wise, he's someone that brings the stuff that doesn't show up on the scoreboard that can change and dictate the style of play that you're going to play with.
What was that, their big flaw right there? They didn't have the next man up?
Possibly, yeah. Possibly, while you're going up
and
against...
And they didn't acknowledge it?
Right. When you're going up against the greatest athlete my eyes have ever seen. That too. 610-632-0975. Let's go to Rob in Garden Valley. Rob, you're on 97.5 The Fanatic. What's up, Rob?
Purdy!
What's up? How are you?
What's going on, man? How are you? Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
What do you call it? I got a Sixers and an Eagles point.
Okay.
With the Sixers, listen, I mean, I don't know how much we'll be able to get out of Simmons in the playoffs in terms of playing above his potential or where he's playing at now, at least. But if Embiid stays healthy, he's a matchup nightmare for the Nets.
I'm not disagreeing with you, but here's where I have the issue. What if, and you're going to see this, you've already seen this, and you've seen it all year, but it has intensified over the last few, when they start bringing two and three guys from different areas, baseline, from the top of the perimeter, and now Joel, he doesn't even have the time and space to really make a decision. He's got to react within half a second, and I'm not going to tell you he's going to fail every single time, because he has done a good job at somewhat adapting into passing, but what happens when they start bringing the heat to them and now you got to rely on your other guys and get them the basketball? That's the fear. We talk about Joel stepping up. I think teams aren't even going to allow him to get the time and space to do it. They're going to force you to beat you in other ways.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely a good point. I mean, Simmons definitely needs to put up more than he has been lately with the 12-point games and 13-point games. But I think that now the Sixers, as in the years past, they've definitely had more perimeter shooters more than they had in the past.
No doubt, especially if teams are going to start going zone on you like you saw the Miami Heat do. The ways to beat these zones, like, you're going to get wide open looks. And instead of Josh Richardson and Al Horford, you now have Danny Green and Seth Curry. And if you can get Danny Green to hit his corner threes, and there's some nights where Seth Curry is on fire, shooting 5 of 6 from three. Then there's some nights where he might go 1 for 6. You know, which day are you going to get from Seth Curry in those moments? And that could be the difference.
Yeah, exactly. Then my Eagles point. I mean, I know a lot of us in the Philadelphia area, a lot of people aren't expecting much of the Eagles this year, but I mean, I think that there is some promise. But I think we give Jalen Hurts a shot. I mean, we have to put the Wentz error behind us. I know people are still caught up in that, but he's gone now. And I mean, Hurts, we didn't get to see enough games from him last year. But I mean, Dak Prescott was a 4th-round pick, and he's a pretty good quarterback. And I think that with him, I think Devontae Smith will be a 1,000-yard receiver this year. I think that we have some promise with those guys back there.
I'm not disagreeing that there's some promise there. And Rob, thank you so much for the phone call. There's definitely promise there. I'm just not insanely sold on it. Yes, there's plenty of quarterbacks that have worked out in deep rounds, right? Tom Brady's the ultimate example, and he's an outlier for sure. But yes, you can find talent in other rounds other than the first round. I just look at him as a guy that will compete hard. He's prepared as anyone else would be prepared. He is engaged properly, and he'll leave everything out there on the field. And one thing I love about Jalen Hurts is, it seems, at least from the outside looking in, that he's a guy that can focus on what he can control. He's not worried about what he can't control. Let me focus on Jalen Hurts, the player. I'm going to put myself in the best position possible. Whether that is good enough to succeed or not succeed, I don't know the answer to that. And I'm talking in, you know, first person, as if I'm Jalen Hurts looking in the mirror. I'm going to do everything I can. I'm going to control what I can control. My work ethic, the way I go to the gym, how I prepare, nutrition, all that. I'm going to do that. If it works, it works. If it doesn't and I fall, I'm going down fighting my best. Now, he probably doesn't even think that. He probably thinks mentally, I'm going to do it, which is the way I want it to be, but
he's such a competitor.
Yeah, he is. But that doesn't mean that, because like Lamar Jackson is an example of someone that I think is a competitor. I am rooting for Lamar Jackson because I hate how everyone looks at him as, right from the jump, he's not a quarterback. Maybe he could play wide receiver. Maybe he can do this. They try and change his position. I'm a quarterback. That's what he was saying early when he first got drafted. I want him to pretty much, you know what, to all these other people out there, a certain finger pointed towards him.
Flip the bird.
Yeah, I want him to flip the bird. I do. I want him to do that to other people. But he has a lot of problems with throwing the football that won't allow that Ravens team to take the next jump. He's dynamic and he's running the football, utilizing his legs. He has a cap because he can't throw the football. Jalen Hurts, to a degree, has a cap because he can't throw the football.
He's a project quarterback right now. You don't know what the ceiling is yet. And if the ceiling is, you know, you get the same results or only slightly improved results from last season, it's like, where the hell do you go for your next quarterback?
And is the next season enough time for you to make that assessment? Or do you need more time than 1 year and 4 games? Because guess what? You're not going to have a lot of time because you have the perfect amount of assets now where if you find out this isn't exactly what you want, this is the time next season to make that jump to get that quarterback you're looking for with the first round picks, with the second round picks, with your own pick. And you can stockpile those picks and go get who you want. So is there enough time to even come up with the conclusion that you're looking for?
Well, the Eagles schedule just released.
Yeah.
And my initial prediction before this, long before the schedule came out, was, okay, they'll go 2-15 for the year.
That's a little aggressive.
That will be, the way I saw it, like, my philosophy is it can always be worse when it comes to the Philadelphia Eagles. It can always be worse. And if 4-11-1 has been the low point so far, then I think 2-15 is also within the realm of possibility. But after seeing that schedule, I looked at it and I said, this is actually a pretty great schedule for the Eagles and what they're building on. So am I predicting them to get an above 500 record? No, but as a building tool for the Eagles this season, I think they're going to be in decent shape and figure out how they can rebuild this football team.
Yeah, and that's how I thought it was before the schedule release, too. I didn't need the schedule release to tell me anything. There's no way that they're going to be a two-win team. There's just no way. As down in the dumps as we were after this season was over, two wins is something that this organization just doesn't go through. No matter how much stock or how much faith you have in some of these guys or whatnot, they're just not a two-win franchise. That's not who they are. I see them more in that six-win category, but you're not going to want to pull your hair out every time you sit down on Sunday to watch the games. 610-632-0975. Let's go to Ryan in Bucks County who wants to talk Ben Simmons. Ryan, you're on 97.5 The Fanatic.
Hey, guys. First off, want to say you guys do an awesome job. I don't know if this is a new show, but first time listening to you guys, and you guys are great.
Thank you so much, Ryan. That really does mean a lot. Thank you very much.
Hey, so talking about Ben Simmons.
Yes.
I have three questions for you guys about Ben Simmons.
Okay.
And I think the way you answer this will easily determine what the path is with him. And I think this is a great conversation because if the Sixers do disappoint in the playoffs and the team plays like it's playing now, you know this conversation is going to be the thing that everyone's going to be talking about.
Sure.
But here are my three questions. Number one, is it worth in today's NBA paying for a max contract for a player that's number one component of his game is defense? Number two, what leads you to believe that Ben Simmons is going to get any better than he is today? And number three, would you feel better about the playoffs right now if we had Chris Paul or Zach LaVine on our team instead of Ben Simmons?
Okay, so I'll start with the last one you just asked first. Zach LaVine, no. Chris Paul, yes. And the reason why I say no to Zach LaVine is that to me, experience is so big for me in the postseason. It's just a different type of beast. Now, Chris Paul, he's had a tremendous career. He's not this playoff guy that has stepped in and just went on these amazing runs by any means. But I think with him tied to a Joel Embiid who is at that level that can take a team on another ride, he doesn't need to be in the position to be that player. It would be Joel to be that player. I don't think LaVine's ready yet, and I don't know if he ever will be that type of player. So for my answer for the last one, I'll go LaVine and no to LaVine, yes to Chris Paul. Now, what is your response to that, though? Do you feel differently about that?
I just think that the last question is, you know, telling, but In my mind, I would take either one of them, but I really think it comes down to the first two questions, right?
Okay.
Is it worth paying for a max player who's better at defense in today's NBA than they're better at offense?
That's a really fascinating question.
Right, because in my mind, I don't think there is a lockdown defender in today's NBA. Could Ben Simmons guard Kevin Durant and hold him to 30 instead of 41?
Well, that's
probably.
Yeah. So I did see him guard Giannis, though, and regular season is not the same as postseason, but he did the best job I've ever seen on Giannis 1-on-1, and it was game changing.
Right. But going back to my point, right? What leads you to believe that this guy is going to get any better than he is today?
Okay. Go ahead.
If you take what Ben Simmons is today, he is a defensive-focused player that can drive to the hoop and score within 10 feet. And when you're constructing a roster in today's NBA, is it worth paying a max contract for that type of player? Because in my mind, he's a three guy.
He's a third piece on a team. He is not a one. He is not a two. And it's hard to win with a guy like that when you're paying him like he is.
Okay, so fair, but here's the thing. With Joel and Tobias, is Ben your three? And, like, does he fit this team's mold as a three? Because Tobias is the closer to Joel when Joel's not closing. So if you have Joel, then you have Tobias. Is Ben that three technically on this team, or do they look at it differently? And maybe because he's the point guard, well, you can't be a point guard that's a three. I'm just asking the question, is that how they look at it?
Yeah. In my mind, Ben Simmons is the three on this team because you guys brought it up earlier. Playoff basketball is different than regular season, right? So when you get into the playoffs, they make a wall for Ben Simmons. They force him to shoot jump shots. It's like playing 4-on-5, right? When we had the best team we had with Redick, Butler, Tobias, Embiid, and Ben, going into that fourth quarter against the Raptors, Ben Simmons was basically out of the equation.
Big time.
So when you look at this team, and you're paying Tobias, who you can even argue, you know, it'd be great if Tobias Harris was your three, right? If Tobias Harris was the three on this team, I think we'd all be feeling a lot better. But the fact that you're paying Ben Simmons a max contract, you're using up one of those super valuable max contracts for a guy who is not a max contract player, in my mind, that kills the roster. Because, like you said, playoff basketball is different than the regular season. And I know you brought up the construction of the roster, but goes back to question number two. What leads you to believe from what you've seen of Ben Simmons that he's going to get any better? Because for him to be a number one option on a team where you just, you know, let him play point forward, like be the four or whatever, like the Bucks do with Giannis, stick a bunch of shooters on the perimeter and say, go, Ben. When has he ever shown you, hey, I'm going to dominate a game. I'm going to drive. I'm going to go to the paint.
Yeah,
I'm going to get fouled.
It's all great points, Ryan, and thank you so much for the call there.
With that last question he asked right there, plenty of times we have seen Ben Simmons be aggressive and take control of a game. My thing is, it's not about whether or not Ben Simmons can get better. I don't care if he gets better. I care about him being consistent with how dominant that he can be. That is my main concern with Ben Simmons, is because he's inconsistent, and that's why he's such a polarizing figure.
Right, but getting better would be getting more consistent, technically be getting better. Maybe not so much like adding nine things to his game, if you will, but if you get more consistent, you then naturally get better, right? Like, isn't that making you a better player? Because you can do it on a more nightly basis. You know, you can do it nightly.
I think that's debatable, but ultimately the answer is yes.
Yeah, no, I don't know. The answer is yeah. I don't see how the answer would be no. I'm curious. If the answer was no, how would you describe
it? This leads me to propose a question to the audience out there. For the people that want Ben Simmons to be quote-unquote better, how do you want Ben Simmons to be better? And if we're throwing consistency as an option for Ben Simmons being better, then I guess that's my way on how I want Ben Simmons to be better.
Yeah,
I've seen him be dominant. I've seen him take control of games. I haven't seen him do that on a consistent level when the Sixers need him to do that. And again, that is my ultimate. And that is, I think, the majority of the Sixers fan base, I think that's the ultimate concern when it comes to the fan base and how they view Ben Simmons. Because I think we all want consistency out of him and being dominant when the Sixers need him to be that aggressive player.
Well, what makes me believe that Ben will be better is the nature of being a professional athlete. Now, not every professional athlete grows every single year. There are players that just are who they are and whatnot, but this is professional sports. It's your job. Players grow. They adapt. They add. They do everything. Like, that's their job. They improve. What happened to Joel Embiid from this year to last year? He has improved. Look at Tobias Harris from last year to this year. He has improved. These players improve. So why believe that Ben Simmons is going to do it? Because that's the name. I even bring him up, and I use Furkan as like somewhat of the joke, but Furkan 2 years ago as a three-point specialist, and I'm using air quotes, he shot under 30%. The three-point shooter that shoots under 30%. Yeah,
you might as well say Mike Scott is your three-point specialist.
Right.
With his name, regional manager.
Right. And now,
give me a break with that.
Furkan shooting over 40. So it's like someone like Furkan, who isn't an amazing, outstanding player, grew as a player, just because that's what you do. So that's what makes me believe that there's something more in Ben, because the nature of a professional athlete is, in any sport, on any team, in any game, is that you improve year after year after year. So whether that's blind optimism or not, I don't know. Maybe it is blind optimism. Maybe we should go back to the beginning. Should I be looking at this as, you should be satisfied with Ben because this is who Ben is? But I don't believe that. I think we're getting 80% of Ben. There's 20% more in there. We need to find a way to get that out of him.
And that's not blind optimism by any means. No, blind optimism would be Ben Simmons is a perfect player. You don't need to see any more out of him. He's fine just the way he is. That would be blind optimism. But we know he can be dominant. That's the thing. And we just don't see it on a consistent level. That's us being critical of Ben Simmons, and we should be critical of Ben Simmons. I don't think we should be overly critical of him, because a lot of the people that are overly critical of him only look at his point totals, and they don't look at everything else he does. But I think we're being fair when it comes to criticizing Ben Simmons. We need to see him take control of a basketball game, and we need to see him be more aggressive, drive to the lane more, get the other team in foul trouble. And it's just not happening consistently. And ultimately, I think a lot of fans, myself and other people at the station, believe it's Ben Simmons choosing not to do that on a nightly basis.
And that's the problem. Ryan did bring up a couple other good questions, though. Is it worth paying a max contract for a guy who does defense more than offense? And
depends on how well he is defensively.
Right.
I think with how good Ben Simmons is defensively, I think the answer is yes. And I think with how well Ben Simmons is offense, because he is good offensively, to me that's clear. It goes back to the consistent factor. He doesn't do it every single night. So those are the variables I have in answering that question, and not having or being hesitant with answering yes or no with that question.
I think it's fascinating, though, because if you say no, it's not worth it, and you look at the alternatives on how you could split that money elsewhere, we're talking about the bench. Well, we're not really great with this bench right now. We feel scared about this bench. Things could be different if that money was spread out elsewhere. Maybe we don't have that feeling. Maybe we feel better about the bench. Maybe we're not concerned there. And I don't know. It really made me think. It really made me think about the way this team is built, which is, kind of scary. It's kind of scary to go that far deep into it when we're ready for this run. But here we go. We got it. We got a playoff run. We have a playoff run sitting in front of us, and this is what we have to deal with. This is the team, and they are number one for a reason. They have proven that throughout the 72-game regular season, they are the best in the Eastern Conference. Will they prove that they are the best in the playoffs? That is yet to be told. 610-632-0975. Lance and everybody else, we will get to you. 610-632-0975. I'm Broads, and you are listening to 97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.